Welcome back to the Drafting Table Podcast hosted by Dominion Due Diligence Group. I'm your host, Daniel Walton. Sorry for the brief delay there between a little vacation and insanely high volume. It's been a little tough to carve out some time, but we're back today. Today I've got an interesting guest, Ryan Hayner. He's the director of our Architectural and Cost Review Department. Ryan, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thanks, Daniel. I manage our Architecture, Engineering, and Cost Department, AEC. Been with D3G for about 13 years, three of which have been in the AEC department. And so far, I've definitely seen a high volume of both new construction and sub-rehab applications come through the department.
Yeah, I would imagine over the last few years, you've seen some records when it comes to just new construction, whether it's HUD or just throughout the industry. The last couple times we met, we've talked about some tips for green. We talked about the CNAE tool, which was eventually delayed and will now be live again on October 13th. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about the construction industry and what we're seeing in the new construction and sub-rehab market. You know, we've been kind of keeping a close eye on things as bid requests kind of fluctuate. We see the reports. You know, you look at the HUD stats. 2018, 33% of HUD's volume was associated with new construction or sub-rehab D4. 2019 dropped down to about 22-23%. This year, it's down to about 15%. You know, the MBA has obviously cited that, you know, refinances are through the roof. Everyone's experiencing that. New construction's a little down. You know, and it's COVID year. So, Ryan, do you think some of these delays of new starts or the lack of new start applications we're seeing could be COVID related, or do you think we're on the other side of the housing curve?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. Certainly, COVID has created an unprecedented challenge for many developers. But multifamily new construction in 2020 is at a five-year low nationally, down about 12 to 15% from 2019, depending upon what statistics you're looking at. And I think that's due to a variety of factors. Certainly, construction costs have been on the rise, and that had started even pre-COVID. But of course, COVID has presented some challenges, creating a slower pace of construction, a shortage of available labor. And then when you look at overall market trends, there's a big emphasis on affordable housing versus market rate new construction housing. So that's kind of really slowed development as well as demand for A&E services across the board.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because the producer price index has been on a, like you said, 5 years of increases with labor and material costs. But then in April through August, asphalt, soft lumber, some of the big things that are really tied to new construction projects for multifamily dropped 35%. So some of it is definitely COVID related, but then some of it's also just what the market's telling us. You know, Freddie Mac just came out with an interesting study that stated that less than 10% of rental units technically qualify as an affordable unit based on the median renter's income. So it's kind of interesting that you see, you know, that affordable is a little bit maybe of a slower developing process. There's an extreme need for it right now. But I think it's just a little harder to do a ground up affordable construction today, because everyone's still kind of in the mindset of a couple years ago when everything was really hot. Are you seeing anything, you know, different construction-wise?
Yes, projects coming in for review have been skewed much more towards sub-rehabilitation than new construction. So that's telling you that in terms of, in the developer's point of view, it's much more cost-effective to rehab existing stock than to build new. So we're seeing a lot of even adaptive reuse or historical reuse, your standard sub-rehab of garden-style apartments, but also a slight change in demographics too. We're seeing lots of elderly, age-restricted apartments come through for sub-rehab, and also properties that are using HUD's Rental Assistance Demonstration Program, basically public housing properties that have lots of deferred maintenance and really do need a significant rehab. Lots of those projects are starting to come through as well, which is very interesting to see. Talking to some of the developers, though, based on the increased demand for sub-rehab projects, they're starting to run out of properties to rehab. So I think it's important to find a solution to the new construction issue that we're having.
It's tough because when you talk about a property that's maybe a good candidate for rehab or, you know, reuse, repurpose, Usually those come with some of those other challenges associated with environmental red tape. You know, if you're talking about an old mill in the middle of the city, it would be a great, you know, a great apartment complex. From a development cost standpoint, you could pour a lot of money into just getting environmental clearance to get started. So I can totally see where you're coming from there. On the front end, I see a lot of proposal requests for sub rehabs, more of those than new constructions right now. I'm also seeing some layers with RAD, a percentage being designated to affordable over market rate. I think your straight market rate project is going to face a lot of scrutiny right now, just given the environment. But are you seeing any other changes, maybe with like design, location, anything that's kind of jumping out at you that you haven't seen in the past with your experience, whether it's in the ArkansCost department as in the engineering department, environmental? You've kind of seen a lot of projects over the last 13 years or so. Are you seeing anything that's kind of different these days?
Yes. As far as location goes, there's been a big shift away from high density urban areas, Washington, D.C., New York, Chicago, Boston, and transitioning over to what are called the Sunbelt areas, modern cities with large metro areas that are located in the southern half of the United States that more resemble suburbs. And those are cities like Dallas, Houston, Miami, Atlanta, and Phoenix. And these areas offer more affordability for renters, more availability for renters, based on the increase in remote work, especially stemming from COVID, there's more flexibility for location for these renters as well. And there's still a proximity to a major downtown areas, major urban business, financial districts to definitely keep the demand high here. Design changes definitely are being driven by renter expectations now because of COVID and having to stay at home and not being able to go out as much. Multifamily renters are expecting luxury amenities and much more of them. So those can either be convenience-based, maybe a mixed-use type of development with convenience stores, health-related amenities, a gym or fitness center, and definitely the most important, I think, would be entertainment amenities, pools, recreation facilities, basketball courts, things like that, or even movie theaters.
Live, work, and play. That's really the big selling feature now. It's not, I want to live near something. It's, I want to live with something. I want to live there where I can work from home, work from a quasi-office space, maybe in my building, which is crazy. I've actually seen a set of plans that was getting ready to hit your desk get pulled because they wanted to convert the clubhouse from being your typical, pool table, nice little kitchenette, typical multifamily walk-up style clubhouse. They were going to repurpose that building and create some work from home type spaces with more people that are needing, a space to work from home. So it's crazy to see some of the changes happening as an immediate response to what COVID has exposed. Very, very interesting to see that. You do mention the major markets, New York, Chicago, DC, LA. New York City is, I'm trying to figure out New York City right now. Per new construction start, they're still the highest dollar amount per multifamily start still goes to New York City. Makes sense. It's an expensive place to do anything. But at the same time, I saw another stat that showed that apartment sales, which is a little different than, a full-blown multifamily development, but it's still representative of people willing to live in a multifamily space, are down 46% in the third quarter. So that's a little interesting when you see New York that's still having a lot of money poured into it, but you're also hearing that people want to be more in the suburbs, and so the stats don't necessarily align there. Somebody's going to have some tough questions to answer if their buildings aren't leasing up quickly. But to get any of these deals done, whether it's affordable or not, it seems like there needs to be some sort of cherry on top or some sort of kicker to make it possible. And I'm kind of talking about mixed finance. Are you seeing a lot of plans that are hitting your desk that have a lot of requirements for, let's say, HUD minimum property standards, but also have other sets of requirements based on the state they're in or tax credits that they're going for?
Absolutely. I think the demand for affordable housing was strong even when there was full employment in the marketplace before COVID, and the demand is still strong. So I think the future of affordable developments are really tied in with low-income housing tax credits. Something like a 9% low-income housing tax credit in new construction application with some form of government subsidy. You mentioned mixed financing, something such as Section 8. You'll be seeing a lot of those in the future, especially given that the financing structure on affordable housing deals is generally tight as it is, which kind of makes it a little bit less attractive to developers because these properties don't generate as much cash flow as market rate properties, and especially with rent collections being a potential issue. I think that subsidy alleviates some of that concern. These developments, though, can be a little bit difficult for developers to navigate, especially with the nuanced due diligence that's required. You've got your state-specific LIHTC requirements for the state housing agencies that have to be followed, but you also have the requirements for the loan program subsidy that you're going for or mortgage insurance that you're going for, like HUD. And an important note is that the 9% LIHTC applications are competitive. So you want to try to score as high as possible on your application, which means providing enhanced features or enhanced amenities that will make that application more attractive. And some of the plans that we've seen come into the department and get reviewed by the code reviewers, it's very interesting to see some of the requirements that the state housing agencies are putting into their A&E requirements. You know, we're seeing things like co-working spaces and in-home offices, upgraded air filtration or ventilation systems, antimicrobial surfaces and finishes, in-unit laundry requirements, and touchless building systems like doors, elevators, and lighting. So those are direct impacts, obviously, of the COVID situation that we're dealing with. So that it has been kind of difficult for developers to navigate. And certainly D3G, obviously, having experience pretty much with every state in the country with their LIHTC with their LIHTC housing, really puts us a leg up in the process.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. One of the things that's really special about D3G is we do have that nationwide touch under one roof feel. You know, part of what we do every year about this time is we start looking for the dates that the new QAP is going to be released for each state, and I have a feeling we're going to see a lot of changes to the QAPs for 2021 based on things like you mentioned, things that we wouldn't have even thought about a year ago, like increased air filtration systems to ensure that you're not spreading, you know, whatever the next virus that there could be. That's something that people are thinking about now. They're not, they want to have all the features and amenities, but there's even more that's going to be included now to keep people safe and make people comfortable to provide that healthy home. But, you know, when you talk about the competitiveness of a 9% tax credit application, you know, I'm seeing a lot of interest in a twinning of tax credits, and that's using 4% and 9%, two separate programs, but on one property, kind of splitting the units and splitting the cost. That's been interesting. But there's also some other factors that go into the 9% application that are also becoming more of a desire for owners and also renters, and that's utilizing green programs. Are you seeing a lot more requests for green buildings and green building certifications?
Absolutely. I think that's definitely attractive to owners and developers, especially as you see the rising operating expenses with owning a property, especially during the COVID times, to try to offset these increasing costs and potential decrease in rent collections. Obviously, some of the green items require a little bit more of an initial capital investment, but certainly down the road, That's something that is very attractive to developers and property owners as well. But it's also something that renters are becoming much more interested in. And sometimes tenants are even willing to pay extra per month to have various energy efficiency features or indoor air quality improvements or even solar sort of cogeneration type energy features at the property.
Yeah, it's really interesting. You know, you talk about adding features and amenities, but also trying to keep things affordable and pleasing, you know, pleasing the renters. It's a tough place to be in, but it's something we understand. We understand the design. We understand the financing. We understand the various levels of applications and deadlines that have to be met. We understand where to get those bonus points, whether it's green or whether it's certain amenities. And, you know, we do try to keep these podcasts short and sweet. So I'm going to start wrapping this one up. We've kind of talked about today what we're seeing incoming work and requests for new construction and sub rehab and some of the changes we're seeing with those applications and design and location. We've touched base on some of the mixed finance and some of the extras that are involved with the process now. If you're working through a tax credit application or you're considering new construction or sub rehab, please reach out to us and let us help you out. Our experience will pay off, and we will make sure that you know you get your loan closed. So thank you for taking some time to listen in to us today. It's good to be back. Thank you, Ryan, for taking some time to join us as well. Next time, we're going to be talking about some of the environmental changes in the pending map guide, how that's going to impact your deals once the map guide is formally published. So just thanks again for taking some time, and we'll catch you next time.